All right, we are here, and we are Galexis, and welcome. Welcome. We're going to talk about your life dream, dreaming your glorious life. Well, now, you might think, well, there's a big process there. Well, the fact is, you are right now, at this very moment, living the life of your dreams. All right? You are experiencing right now what you have created for your future. If you're curious about where you're going and who you're becoming, look at where you are today. Look at what you're doing about it. Look at what you are, how you're responding, how you're being, how you're feeling, what you're thinking. All of this is part of the dreaming that you do in the moment, moment after moment, day after day. The thing is, most people think that their life dream is something way out there in the future, beautiful, big, glorious, wonderful something way out there in the future. But the fact is that what you're doing today is your dream, because at some point in your past, you dreamed a big future that's now. Think about it. A few years ago, or several, lots of years ago, you thought, well, you know, in several years, or in 10 years, or whenever it was, I'm going to be doing this, or I'm going to be that, or I'm hoping that this will unfold, and I'm looking forward to that. But you might not have taken very definitive steps towards it. It may not have become part of your everyday life. So you may have fallen back on an old standard, what we call default dream. Now, default in a computer terminology is the program you revert back to. You revert to that program if you haven't installed anything new. So you can get a whole bunch of new programs, put them on the computer, and they'll all have their already set in this way and that way and the other, and then you have to figure out and set the program to suit your needs. Otherwise, it'll just continue to run on the basic program as it is set by the manufacturer, and that's called the default program. And most people create a default program for their future. A default program that says that in their future they'll be pretty much like they are now. Today's person will be in that future experiencing perhaps some different stuff. You know, the channel knows quite a few people who really loved the series Star Trek. And Star Trek made a name for itself with all the futuristic ideas and images and so on and so on. All the different input that was possible if you were doing interplanetary and transuniversal travel. All sorts of time warping and technology not available at the time it was dreamed up. However, if you notice the people, the state of the people in Star Trek were no more emotionally or spiritually advanced than the person on the street today. That being, that sense of self had not changed. It was only outer circumstances that had changed. And so this is what most people think of when they think of a dream of the future. They think of different circumstances, different kinds of manifestation, different types of input, different types of activities. But they don't realize that it may also imply or also need for them to grow, to be more. To be more mature, more aware, more conscious, and more capable of functioning at a level that is consistent with all the new input, with consistent with all the situations and circumstances that are desired or imagined. A lot of people fall into the trap. What is my dream? What is my vision of life? Where am I going? What's my purpose? What am I here to do? And they all focus so easily on this manifestation and not so easily on these sub-factors, these subjective aspects of the self, the change of yourself, the development, the expansion, the growth of your beingness, your capacity to handle greater and greater amounts of light, of consciousness, of power, of freedom, of visibility. So many people have asked us, what am I here to do? What's my dream? Our role is not to tell anyone, what is your dream? Because that's a delicious and wondrous discovery for yourself. But we do warn you, do not fall for the trap. The trap of looking at the circumstances and thinking, if I have those circumstances, then I will be successful, or then I will be happy, or then I will feel fulfilled, or then my mission will be going strong. Instead, look for the sub-modalities. Look for those subjective factors. Look for the person that you're going to be. More mature, more empowered, more free in your thinking, more capable of making good decisions and choices. Stronger, more aware, capable of responding better to the environment with more elegance and more significance and more impact, making more of a difference. What kind of person can make more of a difference? And so when people ask us, oh, well, what is my purpose? What am I here for? Why am I here? We basically tell them, as we're telling you now, there are two purposes. One is a purpose that is shared by everyone. But now not everyone is conscious of wanting to work with it in the lifetime. But over many lifetimes, they will work on it. And then there are those who are realizing they're on a spiritual and personal development path. And they're going to work on it consciously. They're going to be aware that they want to be more powerful. They're aware that they want to be happier. They're aware that it's in their own best interest and own power to learn how to make their choices, to live their life well. These people who are aware, and those of you who are here are part of these people, are aware that it is the personal work that leads to the greater results. You're on a spiritual journey. You're seeking more out of life than the average Joe on the street. You're on a journey to somewhere beyond. Whether you don't say it that way or not, you're on a journey home. You're on a journey back to the ultimate, back to God. Back to you, whoever you really are. So the first mission, shared by everyone, whether or not they're conscious and working on it or not, is what we call the personal mission. That is a mission of self-realization. That is a mission of understanding who you are, your gifts, your strengths, your talents, your capacities, what suits you, what's right for you? What's your temperament? What's your way? what works for you, how to know more about you as a spiritual being, to understand your divine self, to stay connected and be connected to love and greatness and things that are more. That is your self-realization path, to understand your true value, to be able to make a difference for yourself in your life, to make a life worth living for you. To do that, you have to dream and imagine and envision the person you wish to become. There is a second mission, and only some people accept that second mission. When you come to a place to where you're realizing yourself, you're understanding who you are, you're beginning to see more and more the power you have in your daily life, then you begin to think of a larger scope, a scope of consciousness on the planet, and what level of participation you want to have with that, with the great overview, the great transition. Transition to a new consciousness, a new reality, a new world, a new future. It may be that your contribution is going to be at home in meditation. Or you may be out there giving workshops yourself. Or helping touch people and helping them heal, releasing pain. Or it may be working in a political arena to bring justice, to bring peace. So whatever degree you wish to participate in, nevertheless, it requires that you be aware of who you are and that you do have power and impact on the planet and on consciousness. To do that, of course, you have to understand who you are, that you are a powerful reality creator. You are dreaming your life. If you want to know what future lies ahead, look at where you are right now. You already know the future because you're dreaming yourself right now. What we want to share with you today is a way to consciously and deliberately move yourself forward to be able to direct yourself in a focused and more elegant, smooth, unruffled, calm, maybe even peaceful, glorious, triumphant, fun, loving, joyous way towards a real deliberate dream, a deliberate vision. So first of all, it's good to know what a dream is and what is a vision, so that you can create one for yourself, so you can create one in your future. Because when you put it in your future and you anticipate that in your future, it will continue to align you at the present with it. You will change. You will grow. You will move towards it deliberately with more acceleration and more speed than those who are wandering around looking for, well, what am I supposed to do on the planet? Well, when am I going to get a message about what I'm supposed to be doing? When am I going to get a message that tells me what to do next? When are my spirit guides going to direct me? And that's the trap. That's part of the trap. Looking for perhaps your career, the ultimate career. Oh, that's the great dream. No. Dreams and visions are born very unobtrusively. They're born out of fantasies. Now, when you say dream, you can think of, well, you maybe you have night dreams, and you have daydreams. And look at what those mean. Night dreams, those are what you see at night when you sleep. Some of you remember your dreams, some don't. Some of you can get messages in your dreams, symbolic understandings, and you can awaken knowing this is something that you need to do. But most people don't get messages from their inner self that way. Daydreams. Daydreams are kind of like idle musings. Daydreams are generally kind of escapist places. Daydreams are what we call fantasy. Fantasies are a group of energies, images, ideas about the future. Generally, it's not a probable future when you dream a fantasy, when you are imagining. It's just a sense of imagination to go into the future and imagine something there. Imagine yourself there. Now, fantasies are not very deep. They're generally one-dimensional. They're like a little nice little story. A fantasy imagines you somewhere in a future where all sorts of great things have happened for you. And you're enjoying yourself and you're having a great time. Maybe you have that fabulous lover or spouse. Or maybe you've made all that money and here's what you're doing with it. You're setting up this, you're doing that, you're living on a mansion on the hill, whatever it is. Those are fantasies. They're one-dimensional because basically you don't see the progress that you make from here to there. You don't see the change of yourself that is required for you to be in alignment with that big, big dream, that big, big fantasy, that big, big imaginings. So it's basically, oh, I'm there, and it's the happily ever after part of the story. You've passed all the struggles or the conflicts or all the issues and so on, and you're having a nice time with all your lottery winnings or whatever it is. Now, fantasies generally have some kind of agenda. The agenda of a fantasy is perhaps some kind of vindication of yourself. Or perhaps it is a validation of yourself, where you're adored, where you're respected, where admired, valued by others, looked up to by others, where you're the teacher that everyone comes to. Or perhaps you can have a revenge fantasy, where you can go back, and as innocuous as going to somebody who really put you down and made you feel like a lot of shame and so on, in your revenge fantasy, you put them in their place. You embarrass them in front of everyone else. Ha ha! It's an agenda. Or perhaps if you feel insecure about yourself, the fantasy will be you feeling so secure. You've got more money than, anyone. Infinite amounts of money, so you can feel totally financially secure. An example would be like a lonely single girl who struggles for her income, fantasizing that some really, really rich guy will just love her and snap her up and open the doors of a fabulous life for her, and she'll be taken care of. Now, this is a fantasy dreamed up by numerous adolescent girls. But there are some women who are in their 30s, 40s, 50s, and beyond who still have that fantasy. It's not a place you can really go. Now, if you have a fantasy about, well, let's see, here's what I'd like to accomplish, and you have a fantasy about what it takes to get there, you in the process of getting there, who you have to talk with, where you have to be, etc. it has more depth. It starts to have more engagement and involvement with you in it, and you are growing towards it. This is something that becomes your dream. You don't really have the agenda the same way. You're not needy and trying to fulfill some kind of ego need, which fantasies generally do. An example would be that there are millions of young people all over the country, all over the world, in fact, who dream, who imagine, who fantasize about going to Hollywood, California, and hitting it, making it big in the music industry, and record and have a Grammy-winning album, or become that great movie star, adored and worshipped, and with all the greatest roles. There are millions who fantasize about that at some point in their life. But all those millions, how many of them turn it into a dream? I want to go there and work with such and such actors. I want to go and apply my craft. I love acting as a craft. These are the people who love acting class. These are the people for whom it feels so fulfilling and transformative. And they want more of it. They want to go where is the big hub of it. And to play there, to experience it. So only a few thousand actually move to Hollywood. Take the acting classes, make the connections, network around, go to tryouts, etc., etc. Only some go that far. And even those who make it that far can get diverted by fantasy, even though that can be a dream, something with depth, something that requires effort, something that requires an expansion of the self, something that requires a greatness to emerge out of the self. A dream, a life dream. Nevertheless, once they get to Hollywood, they are teased by the ego fantasies. Oh, they get to go to a party where there's some celebs. They get to rub elbows with the rich and famous. They get drugs. They get crazy lifestyles. Very exciting fantasy material. You don't come to Hollywood to do drugs. That's not part of a dream to be the great actor or whatever. But when you arrive there, if you have visibility issues, if you have lots of insecurities, you'll have fantasies. And you'll take the drugs and feel powerful and strong. And in with the cool people. In with the in crowd, the set that really has it made, hoping to be one of them. That's not a path of growth. And they get diverted. Many lose their bearing, lose their dreams back into fantasy. It shallows them out. They run from reality. Now, if you have a fantasy, that only occurs every now and then, and it inspires you to act on it, that fantasy is part of your dream. Indeed, in order to have a dream, a really full, fleshed out, at least three-dimensional dream, even fourth-dimensional, bringing in time with it, in order to have a real, substantive, manifesting dream, you have to start with a fantasy. So if you have a fantasy, occasionally hear about this or that, and it inspires you to act, and you move on it and so forth, and you do things and get activated, and you don't keep having that fantasy, it's just a piece that feeds your dream. However, if you have a fantasy and you keep going back to the same fantasy over and over and over again, but you don't do anything about it. It doesn't stir you. It doesn't motivate you. It doesn't get you out of your chair and going someplace and doing things and involved in the process of going to that fulfillment, to that desired goal, to that end. Then it's just a fantasy. It's an escape. It's a placator to dissatisfaction with your daily life here and now. Fantasies can be numbing out agents. They can put you asleep. It's like a drug. Fantasies can be very addictive. They're like a drug. They can stall you indefinitely. If you keep going with the same one, that's the danger signal. That's the alert. That's the red flag that warns you. You're using it to escape. It's just a fantasy. It's just a daydream. But a life dream has process. It has depth. Now, there comes a point where the life dream, besides really making your life really good and fabulous, the life dream mission number one, the self-realization and the life dream all connected up and beautiful, moves into and expands into a life vision. What is a vision? A vision is a scope. It's like a fantasy, it's like a dream, but just you keep getting it bigger and bigger, and it becomes more and more real, and it not just involves you growing and you being able to have what you want in your life and enjoy your life, but it has part of mission number two in it. A life vision has to do with why you're here on the planet and what you want to give to this planet. What impact you want to make on it? What difference do you want to have on your world? This is not a given. This is an option. You don't need to have that to live a wonderful, glorious, magical, loving, fabulous life. But there's certainly an extra spiritual dimension to a vision. There's a sense of connecting to home, to God, to the fullness, to the completeness. There's a yearning to go beyond. There's a capacity to love, a capacity to feel that's beyond a dream. And most people cannot get to a good, substantive, strong vision, life vision, until they've made really good progress on their life dream. Because it takes a certain level of awareness to be able to imagine another higher, yet higher level of awareness. One of the teachers of Daniel in the Channel called it the peak to peak. You go to a peak, and there you can, P-E-A-K, and from there you can peak, P-E-E-K, to the next highest mountain. But while you're down in the valley, you only see the first mountain. You can't see beyond it. You can't see the scope of that even larger mountain behind it. You have to get up to some high point enough to get the view, to get the overview. So it's not necessary for you to have a life vision, some participation in this change of consciousness, in this powerful new world, new reality on the planet. That's your option whenever you're ready for it or not. And there's nothing to be judged of you if you don't choose it. And yet, there's so much more to be gained in your life, in the fulfillment, in the joy and the ecstasy and the glory if you do choose it. A fantasy will beckon you. It will call you when you're troubled, disturbed, bored, restless, a little unhappy, feeling tired, feeling angry. A fantasy will call you. It will take you into yourself. It will take you away from that. So it has its purpose. It has its benefit. But being a numbing out device, unless you activate it, it can be a trap for you. The dream. When you establish a dream, a sense of yourself, a sense of your new future, a sense of your greatness and expansion in the future, and the depth and height and breadth of that, it will anchor into your consciousness and start lining you up with it. In essence, a dream will pull you. It will start pulling you towards it. That's when you start to see magic open for you. When you see opportunities pop into your life just at the right time for you. But even so, if you want even more pull, if you want even more magnetism from the future, then have a greater scope. The vision will move you even faster. The vision will just pull you. It hooks into you. It will pull you. It will pull you out into the world to do whatever it is that needs to be done. And it will, in a sense, force you, even though it's been your choice, and it is your choice, it will, in a sense, appear to force you to grow. To grow more, to be more than you are, to respond at a higher level, to be more responsible, more empowered, with greater capacity, to be more free of the limitations and the old trips and the old learning cycles that have held you back. It will pull you faster. A vision is the most elegant way to grow. It requires the most of you, but at the same time, it will pull you with greater magic, greater synchronicities, greater miracles, greater phenomenal events. And greater awarenesses on your part. Awarenesses that you would have no idea that you wanted until you got them. Pleased that you will be delighted in recognizing your own divinity and seeing how your own divinity makes a difference in the world. So how do you construct a dream? And from there, a vision. You see? Now you know, by example, that there's some people who come to Hollywood and become the famous actor or actress. And they will take their vision for the world. Perhaps they'll be the great rock star or whatever. And they will take their celebrity status and put it into some cause to make a difference, a positive difference. People are very aware of how Sting does environmental conservation and does benefits concerts for environmental purposes. Those visions, like creating foundations for young playwrights in Hollywood, to going to other countries or to poor rural areas and building schools, or even creating wells in desert villages. To help others to expand that giving and service. That's form. That's the way it manifests. That's the way it looks. So you need to know who you're going to be and you need to know how it looks. So the first step, that's, we're going to give you seven questions, basically. These are seven questions that you can ask yourself during your day to help yourself keep alignment with where you're going, with your dream. Of course, you're going to start out with a fantasy, and from that fantasy, you're going to find the fantasy that is able to activate you. But even if you're not, if you ask these questions, you can find your fantasy. You can find your dream. You can create it, put it together. The first question is, what are you thinking and feeling all day? Pay attention to your thoughts and your feelings, to your reactions to things, how you evaluate stuff. How you make sense of what goes on around you. Your thoughts, your feelings, paying attention to those. How you talk with other people, how do you interface with them? And also, what stories you're telling yourself. What thoughts and feelings do you repeat all day? Because you're not there thinking original thoughts all day, thoughts that humans have not been thinking. You're lucky if you only have one or two original thoughts in a period of time. But these are generally repetitive thoughts. Maybe they're platitudes that mother used to say, or maybe that there's impressions of people, or maybe there's judgments on you. Maybe you keep thinking about money all day. How to get more money, more money, more money. Or maybe you're having an issue with your mate or a friend or something, and it's on your mind all day, over and over and over and over again, trying to figure it out, trying to explain it in your mind to yourself, trying to rationalize stuff. All that rationale, you're gifted at it. You can fill your head up all day with it. Pay attention. And what story about you do you tell? What image about you do you reinforce with your thoughts and your feelings all day? You reinforce you, the insecure person? The fearful one? Or do you, rah, rah, let's go get 'em, tiger? Kind of stuff all day to push yourself, to drive yourself, to motivate yourself, to trying to get yourself doing more, get it done. Come on, faster, faster. Crack the whip. What goes on in there? What goes on in your head all day? If you can be conscious of it, you can change it. You can adjust it. It's not real. It's not solid stuff. It's just blah, 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 blah. So what do you do with it? You just decide to change it. When you find yourself thinking something, automatically, knee-jerk reaction to things, stop, wait a minute, I just reacted. The channel just the other day was discovering that any time she dropped something, she would swear. Well, now, what state of mind does that betray? A state of a judgment about herself being some incompetent idiot that she dropped this? Or frustration at, oh no, not again, I've dropped this and now it's a mess and I'm going to have to clean it up and, oh, damn it, I feel so victimized by it. Maybe subtle, but do you swear when something happens, when you make a mess, when you drop something, when you hear disappointing news? What? Well, how do you react to stuff? What's your emotional response? What's your knee-jerk automatic reactivity? Become aware of it for yourself and make changes. Look at what you're feeling. Look at what you're thinking and pay attention to those feelings. Where do they come from? Pay attention to the thoughts. Why do you think that? Where did you get that? Where did you learn to do that? And why do you do that? Does it make you feel any better? What if you, instead of swearing when you drop something, or this is what the channel came up with, what if instead of swearing, she could laugh? And she says, oh, I get my exercise today. I get to bend over and pick up stuff, right? Ha ha. Look, evidently my body hasn't gotten enough exercise today. Ha ha ha. What if she had a different reaction to it rather than the angry one? Are you an angry person? Just scratch under the surface? What's your favorite emotion? What is the one that you go to in your default program? What's your knee-jerk one? Anger? Fear? Self-pity? Where'd you go? Change it. Change it just by choosing to change it. Pay attention to it. Become aware of it. And say, okay, next time this happens, type of thing, I'll respond differently. See what that does for you. See how much awareness that builds for you. If you're an angry person, well, go and do some meditations, visualizations, and blow a bunch of things up and get it off your chest and scream and swear in meditation and so on and so on and get it done. Don't go carrying it around in your bodies. The second question to ask yourself is, what limiting beliefs do I hold? What limitations do I buy into as being real? You know, we've given this before, but there's like the shopkeeper who requires people to come to his or her location to buy things. And they're just sitting there waiting for clients, people to come in, customers to buy. And the weather gets really bad and nobody seems to be showing up. So they'll make a belief. Okay, it must be the bad weather. That's why people aren't coming to the store. It's not anything, of course, they've done. It's not that somehow or another that the energy of the store is kind of gloomy because they're depressed or angry. Now, they're not getting enough business, or they're scared because they're not getting enough business, or whatever. Of course, if you hold fear and anger in your energy, it kind of repels people. You've noticed this, haven't you? When you come across people who are scaredy cats all the time, people who are nervous about everything, or people who are angry about everything, do you really want to spend time with these people? Generally not. New studies have shown that if you're with a happy person, you're like 20% more likely to be happy yourself. And if that happy person that you're with has another friend, you don't even know that friend, but that friend is happy. You have a 7% chance of being happier. It's like, who's in your network? All right, So look at, what are your beliefs? What's limiting you? Is your belief limiting because you see yourself as some kind of weakling? Is it because you see yourself incapable of doing something? Or do you believe that it's hard to get wherever you want to get? Or it's impossible because it requires this, that, and the other that you don't think you're ever going to have or you don't think you can get? Or you think it's somehow or another, in order to get there, you got to win the lottery. But you despair of ever winning the lottery. You don't even buy any tickets. What is your limiting belief? Very important for you to get that. to understand your limiting belief. Because if you can understand what limiting beliefs you hold, you'll be able to change them. First, you have to convince yourself beliefs are not real. I've chosen them. Take responsibility for the beliefs that you hold. Do not consider them real. Do not consider them written in stone. Do not consider them absolute. There is no such thing. There's no absolute belief limitation. It's up to you to create wherever your boundaries are, wherever you create your walls. However you box yourself in, it's your own choices. Some people have very freeing beliefs, and their limiting beliefs don't seem to pinch them very much. So they have more successful lives. And then there are people who are just bound in by whole bunches of beliefs, anchored in all that anger or fear. And it keeps them stuck. So change those beliefs by choice. So it'd be like if you were the shopkeeper and like you realize, hey, you know, I made that one up. I put a cause and effect together. The effect was that people weren't coming into the store. And so I decided that the cause was that it was raining and bad weather and whatnot. I'm going to break this cause and this effect from each other. And I'm going to say, well, it might have been my mood. When every time it rains, I do get kind of moody. And maybe that was it. Maybe it's something else that I don't even know. But I'm going to anticipate next time it rains, I'm still going to have good business. I'm going to think about what would it be like if that weather had no bearing. I'm going to choose that weather has no bearing. Play with that. Work on it. Make the other choices. Now, some people do this with the affirmation thing where you write down the affirmation and then you, in one column, and you start with writing down affirmation. And in this B column, you give your objections to it, the beliefs that come up, the resistance, reactions. Oh, okay. All right, there it is. Listen to your ego talk. Listen to your immature, angry self talk. The angry young man or woman, listen. What does that part say within you? Okay. All right, I hear that. Okay, then you write the affirmation again. And listen, what's next? You go down a level. You write the affirmation on the left side. You come over back over to the right side. Now is the third time. And you may go to a deeper level. You may go to other stuff. And the technique is that you just keep doing it and keep doing it until the right column empties out. And there's no more talk there. There's no more feedback. There's no more resistance. And you're just left with, okay, that's it. On the right side, as soon as it goes, okay, all right, I'll go with that. And you're done. Sometimes it takes a long time to get there, but it's very revealing. You'll reveal your thoughts and your feelings and your limiting beliefs and all that kind of stuff. And you can, by your choice, remove it. The third question. Where do you send your energy? See, all of you are surrounded with an aura, an energy field, or the biofield, as it's called. Psychic energy. It's around you in a cloud. People who are clairvoyants can see it. And they can look in it and they can read stuff in your aura. Psychically perceive things. Tell you things about yourself and you go, wow, that's really amazing. Outstanding. You can feel it within yourself as a kind of an energy. You know, some days you just feel energetically better. Now, we're not talking necessarily about physical energy, but very often when your aura is really bright, your physical energy is also a bit higher. You're more optimistic. You feel lighter and freer. Now, this energy is always going on in exchange between you and others. You're always giving energy to others. Every time you talk to somebody and you give them your attention, you're giving energy to them. By your attention, by the sheer act of paying attention to them speak, you're giving them energy. And as they're speaking to you, you're listening to them, and you're receiving energy from them. You're giving energy and receiving energy continuously, all the time, from people, from your environment, you know, from animals, from plants, from furniture, you name it. Anytime you put your attention on anything, you put energy to it. You have put it into your intention, even if it's for a few seconds. And you receive energy from it if you wish. Some of you do a lot of giving, 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 giving of your energy and forget to receive it. Forget to allow yourself to let energy come back into you. And so you can get depleted from time to time. And then you push everything away and say, go away, I've got to have a sabbatical, I've got to go rest, I'm going to go and crawl into bed, pull the covers over, and world, I'm going to forget you for a while. You can get depressed if you don't receive enough energy. You wear out. You burn out. You get tired. Emotionally, mentally tired. You're not upbeat anymore. Where do you put your energy? Where do you put it? How do you do it? Do you just kind of blithely give it away to everybody? Blah, 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 blah. And then not receive any? Push everything that they want to give you back? I'm not safe to receive anything. I don't want to receive anything. A lot of people do a lot of giving, and then they expect that this giving will entitle them to some darn good, juicy receiving. And then when the receiving comes to them, they're scared and they stop it. These people have intimacy issues. They would much rather kind of dominate or control somebody than actually be intimate with them. Where do you stand about giving and receiving? Some people are very stingy about giving, and they want to receive, so they're going to take energy. They want to pull, suck energy from you. You've felt that one, haven't you? You get really tired after being with these people because they've gone, shoop, shoop, shoop. They could put a straw into your aura and go, shoop, shoop, sucking it in. And if you happen to be a giver, oh, perfect combination. They're going to take, which is a form of manipulative receiving, and they're going to take, shoop, 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 shoop. They're going to grab it, take it, and you're going to let them. And so that's not good either. How do you use your energy? Do you let your energy be taken? Do you overgive? Are you stingy with your energy? Do you need energy? Do you go to be around people to get more energy from them? When you realize this, start balancing your energy correctly. If you're around a person who sucks energy, then you can just simply mentally just create a little bit of a psychic wall between you and them. It's all energy. So just create a wall in energy. It's not cruel. It's just you protecting yourself. That's an easy thing to do. Now there's more complex and more beautiful things to do. You'll find those out later. But first you want to protect yourself, right, from the depleters. But then you also want to receive from your reality, not just from people, not just to open up and let people love you, but to receive energy from the walls, from the ceilings, from furniture, from other people, from your whole reality, because, dear ones, you are a co-creator. You and your team created this marvelous illusion for you to play in called reality. It's yours. Yours. Belongs to you. It's all yours. You can have in as much of it as you want. You can hold your illusion at arm's length, or you can pull in energy. Just go around. You can just do a little gesture where you just kind of go out and just kind of pull in like soft, billowy light. Just kind of bringing it in to your chest. And do it to trees. Go, you know, trees love to give energy. They're wonderful. Or you can go hug a tree and the tree will give you beautiful, peaceful energy. You wonder why people like tree hugging. It's yummy. You actually open up and let yourself, just for a moment, just kind of become connected, become one with a tree. Animals do that too. Your pets. You just open up and receive just wonderful energy from them and give them energy. You have wonderful give and take a lot of times with your pets that sometimes you don't have with other humans. Because you're not fearful of receiving from your pet. You can open for it. But practice opening. Opening and opening. And if there's something that you don't like that comes into you, no big deal. Just send it on. Send it on through you. You have a person who's being aggressive. Take in. They've got lots of energy. Receive it. Just kind of take some of that energy and just move it right on through you and see if anything sticks. It won't. Unless you're an angry person. Then you want to fight, you know? Some people have to have anger and fight to get themselves motivated, to get energized themselves. It's a very false way of energizing. Where do you put your energy? The fourth question is how do you define things, especially what we call fat words? We don't know who originally came up with that term. Perhaps it was NLP lingo or something. But fat words are words such as power, love, freedom, happiness. You know, these are words that have a broad sense of meaning. They're contextual. They are abstract. And everybody defines them differently. Freedom to you will be different from freedom to another person. It'll be defined by how you perceive the way freedom acts in your life and what it's going to feel like and what it's going to look like and what circumstances are going to come with it. Love. For some people, love is defined as something very, very intense, very fleeting, and scary. And their images will be of being with somebody that looks like a really potential loved one. And as soon as you get close, it's, oh my gosh, the illusion is just blasted. And all of a sudden you see them for the scumbag they are. And you're so disappointed and hurt. And then you feel let down and betrayed, perhaps even abandoned. Some people go through that cycle over and over and over and over again. And they'll always blame the other person. But they may not have found their definition and realized it was their own definition of what happens when you are loving or being loved or when you're in the experience that you consider quote-unquote love. See, when you are looking to be taken care of by your mate and nurtured and fussed over, you're a child. In your love definition. It's a definition that probably came from age 6 or 7. If you're looking for love and it means wild, passionate sex, that's love. Yeah, yeah, it's all exciting. We get up in the morning and, oh gosh, we have it before breakfast and then we go to work and then we come back and, oh my gosh, more. And we've got to go off to that island together. We've got to do this together. We've got to do all that adventure together. It's an adolescent definition of love. One you maybe made when you were 16 or 17. If you have a fantasy of being the prince or the princess, the rich one, the one filled with success, everybody adoring you, you got it made, you can tell everybody else how to make it good. Because you're there. It's probably the 22-year-old who defines what that success is. So look at it. Make sure that your definitions are current to who you are today and not old ones from the past. Pay attention to your definitions. Make a list of things that are important to you, like freedom and power and responsibility and love and passion and, you know, make a list. What are fun words? What are nice fat words for you on that list? And then just go down the list one at a time and see, how do I define it? What's my definition as an adult of my age that I am now? Eliminate all the others and then make something up that is appropriate to who you are now. Most people don't keep upgrading their definitions. And this can be a tremendous resistance to a dream, to even finding a dream. Next question, number 5. What is your favorite fantasy? What is a fantasy that keeps returning over and over through the years, or the one that seems to be on your mind the past few months? What's that fantasy, the favorite fantasy? What's the agenda that's in that fantasy? What are you trying to fulfill? What need? If it's a fantasy that you are inspired to act upon, then it's not a fantasy. It's part of a dream. But we're talking about the one that, the daydream type. The ones where, oh gosh, wouldn't that be great when that happens, when I have all of this, and when that takes place, then I'll put together this beautiful and that wonderful thing, and blah, 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 blah. Where are you waiting for something, some magic that's going to happen, something that's going to happen down the line? What's the agenda underneath it all? Is it so that you can feel, I am finally a good person? I'm finally productive? I'm finally okay? I'm finally going to fulfill my purpose in a big way? Or is it one of those pettier ones like revenge and vindication and ego and what is that that's in there? What is the agenda? How long have you had that agenda? Recognize that as long as you have that agenda, as long as you have that neediness or that sense of yearning, longing, aching for, without acting on it, it's a trap. So take that agenda and work on it in other ways. Look at it from the point of view of a powerful person. I'm going to look at this agenda and I'm going to take steps towards healing it just emotionally for me. All right, does it feel insecure? It feels like you need security, you need to be taken care of. Well then, in some way or another, take care of yourself. Is it about you being healthy and energetic? Well, take that energy. You've got infinite energy you can receive from the divine and from your reality. Take that energy in and infuse yourself with that energy. Work on whatever it is. Start healing. Start healing that agenda. Start making a difference for your own personal life. Question 6, who is it that you wish to be? What kind of qualities, what kind of temperament, what kind of lifestyle, what kind of daily unfoldment is perfect for you? What kind of flow in your life, what kind of way is your way? Who are you? And when you are in your light self, in your light being, what can you accomplish? What can you do? Pay attention. Put together. define that fulfilled self. Define the self that's going to live the dream. Even if you don't know what the dream is yet. Get the subjective factors first. How are you going to deal in a relationship? How are you going to communicate with people? How are you going to work out disagreements? Generally, that's very telling. Because most people, as soon as there's a conflict, will turn on their heels and skedaddle out of there. Or they'll become aggressive and defensive and attack. Or they will pass on blame to something else real quick. What do you do when conflict shows up between you and someone or in a circumstance? If you have any of those old systems that come from old reactions that come from childhood and adolescence and maybe your young adult life, where you before you really felt got the ropes, learned the ropes of life, those approaches, change them. Look at it differently. How would you, as a person who knows your divinity, who's realized yourself, who values you, who feels safe and comfortable being you, and who lives a life that's just right for you, how would that person respond to a conflict? What would you do? What would you say? How would you react? A very powerful, secure, loving, empowered person will most likely say, oh yeah, you have a disagreement? Let me hear about that. How do you see that? Let me understand your point of view. And I'll have some compassion for you too, because you're frustrated with me and I can see that. So I have some compassion because I know what it's like to be frustrated with somebody. So let's hear what that is. And let's see what we can do to address that. How many times have you been strong enough to do that? It's not what you're taught. It's not what you pick up. But it may be what your dream self can do. And the seventh question, the final question is, and this is the one that not only anchors in the sub modalities and the sub qualities, attributes, contexts of your dream life, but of your vision as well. And that is, if you had a choice, if you were fulfilled and realized, what would you want to do for the planet? What gift would you have? What issue or cause that is really, really important to you? It doesn't have to be perceived as, oh, well, this is important for everybody would think this is most important. No, you don't think about what other people would perceive, but what would be really important for you? Are you like a friend of the channels years ago? Wanted to save unwanted animals. Tremendous compassion and love to pull together, saving these animals that nobody else wanted. That was the vision. To give love, to give that love, to make that difference to some other beings. Yes, they're animals. Some people want to save plants, ecosystems. Fight with the Department of the Interior to save a certain area because there are some endangered plants on this field, in this area. Others will fight for humans, for human rights, or for humans to have basic services, or for young people to have anger management classes, or to help lift them through offering them creative activities or some kind of outlet. You know, there's these programs that take inner city ghetto kids out into the wilderness and teaches them how to function in a totally different environment. And they learn so much. They get a connection with nature that they never get. They learn how to work together in teams. What impact is that going to make on their future? So what cause would be close to your heart? This is something that's heartfelt. Something you would like to provide to some group of people, or animals, or plants, or ecosystem, or something. It can be far-fetched, like, okay, I want to be a emissary that travels between Earth governments and extraterrestrials. It's a bit offbeat. Or it could be something that is compassionate and works through a local charity at the soup to provide food for the soup kitchens, distribute toys to poor children. It can be any one of those things, but it has to be close to your heart. What is that? Play around with it. Find if you can, the one that has the most meaning for you. Those are your seven questions. And as you start to work with them, as you start to play with them, something's going to emerge. You're going to create some space in your psyche to dream beyond the fantasy, to imagine something greater for yourself. You can take that fantasy and take the parts out of it that excite you. You can start looking at, well, what would it, I would really love to experience that would be fun to get there to, that I could process to, that it would, the in between, the means to the end would be as fun or more interesting than the ends themselves. What could that be? The ends being the manifestation, being the form and structure, the circumstances, the solid physicality that you would like to see. What process would be fun to get there? You want to write a great novel? Do you enjoy writing? Then it can be workful. It can be a dream. But if you wanted to write the great American novel and you sit around and hope that someday you'll prioritize your time to sit down and write, then you got a little work to do to get out of the fantasy and get into the dream, if that's indeed what it is. So start thinking about that. Now we're going to take a break. And you get a chance, if you want to look over your questions and see if you get a sense of it. And then you can ask us questions related to that. And before we go into the meditation, where we're going to take you through a process and get you into your dream and step you into your vision, we're going to give you, excuse us, we're going to give you steps of manifestation to do. And then we'll take you on a meditation and image you through those steps so you can see what it's like to dream and imagine the process of a dream. And you can install that into yourself. So seven questions, the internal part. And there's going to be seven activations that we'll share with you later. But for now, it's time to take a break, to think about these things. You may already know what your dream is. Not just who you're going to be, but what the form of it is going to take, what the circumstances and manifestation of it are going to actually look like. You may already know. But ask yourself the seven questions briefly then. Just make sure that it's a current adult version. That it feels right. All right. So it'll be what, 20 minutes?
15 minutes.
All right. So we'll close now, and we'll be back with you shortly. Farewell.